Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. The Pro Wrestling Year in Review series continues with a stop in March 2024, of course. We lead off with what else? Sting's retirement at AEW Revolution. Part of a big month for the company that included, again, Sting's retirement, Revolution. Big money when it comes to the box office, the official announcement and debut that Mercedes Moné was signed with AEW and, of course, debuted at Dynamite Big Business in Boston. I was there for that show. We talk all about that. And another big free agent, Kazuchika Okada, signed with AEW. We chat about that. Of course, the best in WWE and NXT, the final bill for WrestleMania 40, continued fallout from Vince McMahon, plus all the news from Japan, TNA, and the junk drawer with everything else that you missed during the month of March. Help me on this episode, the returning Jesse Collings of Voice of Wrestling and a Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast. He and I talked for well over an hour about all the big things that happened in March. Please note this was recorded before Full Gear, and so we give some Full Gear predictions or some thoughts about it that ended up not being true, I don't believe. But, you know, that's what happens when we make predictions and guess. So let's get right to it. Myself and Jesse Collings talk about March 2024 in the world of pro wrestling on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Enjoy. Back with another edition in my year in review series, and glad to welcome back Jesse Collings, coming back for his third straight year and more appearances than that, of course. But Jesse is back to talk about everything that happened in the month of March. And a lot happened here with Sting retiring and all this stuff. We'll get all to that. But Jesse, it's been a while. Tell the folks how you've been doing.
I've been doing great, Josh. Thanks for inviting me back on the show. And I get March this year. I have a theory, Josh, that you have a list of like a power ranking of potential guests. And like January is number one, February is number two. So it kind of goes down through calendar year. By the time you get to like November, December, I know you're scraping the bottom of the barrel. You're going with like, you know, you're like a baseball team. This is going to be our bullpen game. Like we're just going to try to get some innings out of these guys. But to be the number three choice means that I'm highly regarded.
Exactly.
As far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. You're in the number three hole. Yeah. You're right above the cleanup hitter and everything like that. Yeah. You're in good company here. Yeah. So obviously, you're still the Gentleman Wrestling Podcast, of course, and still doing columns at Voice of Wrestling, correct?
Yeah, I'm still writing. You know, it really comes and goes. For so long, especially when I was at Wrestling Inc., I was writing one or two columns a week, like clockwork. And now I think about that, and I was like, man, how was I doing that? Like, I know it was when I was, in my early 20s, so maybe I just had more energy and more thoughts, and my content was probably not as good because I didn't have as much experience writing, so I probably didn't take as much pride in the work. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I can only write now when I really feel like I'm motivated to write, and that, you know, that strikes on different occasions. I've gone like, you know, as long as a month without writing something, but then I would write something on like back-to-back days. So it's really just kind of inconsistent in terms of when I write columns, but I still probably do about 12 to 20 a year, I would say.
That's a good pace. Yeah, it's hard to write on demand at times, especially when it's an opinion piece, I found.
Yeah, you start doing gimmicks, like stuff that I ultimately like kind of don't want to do, like, you know, pay-per-view previews, pay-per-view reviews, like that kind of stuff. And I just, that is something like pay-per-view reviews and pay-per-view previews, that's something that you can only do for like a year or two before it just becomes totally monotonous, especially when you're talking about like when WWE, this was, and when I was doing it, it was like the time where WWE was doing like, you know, 14 pay-per-views a year or something really large. They've scaled it back a little bit, but it just becomes so monotonous, especially when the product doesn't change that much, you know, 3 weeks apart from each other.
Agreed. Let's do a pay-per-view review here of sorts, Jesse. We're going to talk about March. And this month, you know, the first 2 months of the year, WWE was what kicked us off, obviously, with all the Vince McMahon news and the TKO news and The Rock coming back and all those good things, except for the Vince thing. That was obviously not a good thing. But we'll kick off with AEW this month. They had a very newsworthy month because Sting officially retired at Revolution, retired as a champion. tag team champion, along with Darby Allin, defeating the Young Bucks in front of a packed house in Greensboro, North Carolina. I believe the gate was over $1 million, sold out, and it was a legit great night, I think, for AEW and Sting, and also I think for the industry as well. You don't really see these things in WWE or other promotions, but they really did it the right way on this night. Everything that happened during that night, and then we'll kick it over to your thoughts. Pac returned vignette air during the show, and he would later be announced to be returning in a Elite Trios match at Big Business Dynamite, which we'll talk about in a minute. The company had to make the pay-per-view available on Fight in the U.S. due to continued Bleacher Report Live issues or all type of complaints in the first hour or so of the show. So AEW is able to open that up and allow people to buy on Fight instead. I don't know. I assume they probably gave some sort of refund to those people that bought on Bleacher Report and then Fight. They didn't really explain that at the time, but kind of in a last second thing, they allowed to do that, which is the first time. Precursor of more to come. Wardlow, remember him, won a scramble match at the show and earned a future world title shot, which would be cash in a Big Business. Roderick Strong won the international title. Kyle O'Reilly made his return from injury. Again, he was off for a very long time after neck surgery and so on. Darby Allin did a glass spot in the Revolution Tag Team match. It was an update on him that he was okay. He was bleeding all over the place and all that, as Darby Allin's prone to do. And then we had some of the kind of the fallout or some of the news coming out of the Sting match. We had Michael Cole on WWE Raw congratulating Sting on the retirement. How about that? We learned that the main event had a plan B finish if Darby Allin couldn't continue. After the aforementioned glass spot, the company again did over $1 million gate. Lex Luger said WWE allowed him to attend the final match. Of course, he's under a Legends contract, but he had to be off camera because, if he was on camera, it would have completely just ruined everything, right? Undertaker acknowledged Sting's retirement. I believe probably on one of his podcasts saying he deserved that. And then Greensboro, North Carolina, declaring March 3rd as Thank You Sting Day. So, yeah, overall, I have nothing negative to say about any of this. I thought it was great. I thought it was a feel-good night. The only, as I'm thinking back this now, the only thing that really annoyed me is they cut off Sting's speech. The pay-per-view went off the air. I don't know how you mistime that. I think if you're having him do a promo afterwards, it's okay to end the pay-per-view early and you maybe cut something earlier from the show. There was definitely some filler and at least one kind of fluff match that you could have just cut out of that. But regardless, it was a great night for Sting, and it was this is one that I think a template you could use for other retiring stars. And I don't know if you want to do the same exact thing time after time, but I think there's a certain way to honor legends, especially if you can kind of map it out the way they did. And some of the lead up was kind of, suspect because they couldn't announce some things because Sting's parents not doing well. So he was kind of hit or miss for some of the shows leading up. But as far as the landing, I thought they stuck it.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's a template you could use for other wrestlers, but realistically, like, what wrestlers are out there that have Sting's kind of cachet with a fan base, the nostalgia that's generations of fans have for Sting? There really isn't that many guys, like who are going to have this retirement match as formally that you can do this, like. I guess, John Cena, is he gonna actually retire like at the end of this year?
That seems to be the plan. I mean, they're doing this retirement tour. So, I mean, never in wrestling and fighting, retirements are only as good as somebody calling up the phone, calling up and saying, we're going to give you X amount of money to do something. So, but Sting, I mean, he's made an appearance since then, but I don't think he's stepping back the ring anytime
I
soon.
think as far as confidence levels in terms of wrestling retirements, which as you mentioned are really low, the Sting one feels pretty legitimate, especially since this happened in March and we're here in November, and the more time goes by, the less likely it is for him to return. Maybe if AEW signs a big deal with Saudi Arabia, he'll suddenly come out of retirement.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, like I think this was. It's probably the highlight of AEW's year. I think if we're talking about like fan polls at the end of the year, like what was your favorite moment in AEW this year? If not your favorite moment in all of wrestling this year, it's probably the Sting retirement match and how well it was done. The build up to it, the match itself, the we had Sting's sons coming out as like the different versions of Sting's. That was fun. Obviously, he did it in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is like the Sting territory. And I thought the Young Bucks were really good in their role in terms of the heels that people wanted to see beat up Sting. Obviously, Darby, the pairing of Darby and Sting, which is really funny because when it first happened, I thought it was like, because it was basically Sting mentioned it like basically in his opening promo when he showed up and they showed Darby Allin watching. Like, it's kind of like, oh, because both guys wear face paint, like they have to be teammates, like what are their actual similarities between the two of them? But it ended up working out so super well just from an aesthetic perspective. Darby was the perfect partner for Sting to do all the things in a match that Sting couldn't do, although he certainly tried at times. Really held everything together and I think did an incredible job in I think establishing Darby as a wrestler in AEW. Just everything about the last, Sting's, last 2 years of his career really in AEW was probably the biggest booking accomplishment in Tony Khan's career, I would say, in terms of from a beginning, middle, and end, how strong and successful that was. In doing something that a lot of times is more difficult than people think. Like they think it's easy to have a veteran legend and go out there and draw some money with them, but we've seen many, many times that goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, and you bring up the point about the things that Sting couldn't do, Darby doing some of the things. I mean, Sting certainly was throughout the AEW run, he definitely did not certainly was out there trying. I mean, I don't think he had any singles match. I think it was all tags and trios and things like that, which is smart. But he certainly was doing plenty of dives, even leading up to builds to matches and things like that. I mean, he was putting his body out there at what, 63 or whatever, how old he is. And I mean, he certainly wasn't mailing it in. And you see some legends and wrestlers, they get older, they just can't physically do it. But Sting is a he was an anomaly. I think that just added to his aura in AEW, coming off obviously the failed in so many ways, the WWE run, which really wasn't necessarily his fault, but just how he got treated that WrestleMania match, which he should have never lost. Just all these type of things. I think it was a righting some of the wrongs of just how people perceived him during the TNA years when I think he admitted he really wasn't trying his hardest or what have you. And then a WWE run, which we thought was going to be over after the buckle bomb from Seth Rollins and things like that. It put a nice encapsulation on a career and a respectful end. And I think that was another key takeaway as well, is they really treated him with the reverence that he had earned and he deserved. And people respected that and people liked that. And it wasn't as much as people complain about AEW stuff. I think it's a good point. It's a nice coronation or a, probably the apex of, Tony Khan's booking, I'd say so far in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, he totally like his AEW run changed the way that I felt about Sting. I don't remember him in WCW. I'm too young to remember. Certainly like his, I feel like the biggest Sting fans are people that were, children or teenagers in like the late 80s, early 90s when he
Sure.
was Surfer Sting and like it's just part of their childhood. And, I wasn't born until 1994, so I don't really remember any like Sting, like prime Sting years at all. I wasn't watching wrestling then. And then, like you said, like the TNA run, like he was presented as a star, but there was all sorts of issues with TNA. I thought, I was annoyed by him because they were leaning on him to be a top guy when they had younger talent that made more sense to push. So I wasn't a huge fan of him then, and then the WWE run obviously was what it was. So like when he was signed by AEW, I'm like, ah, I guess it's kind of cool. People seem really excited to see him, but I have personally no reverence or interest in seeing Sting at all. And that changed because I think he was finally put in a position where I was allowed to see him as the kind of star that he was in his prime, even if obviously athletically he wasn't close to that same kind of wrestler, and there was a real limit on what he could do. But it really taught me to appreciate this guy's star power and the aura that he had for fans. And even talking to fans that were like, I remember I sat next to a woman at an AEW show, and she said like, "Oh, I really, I didn't really watch wrestling for like 20 years, but I came back and started watching because Sting showed up in AEW and I was a huge Sting fan. And I wanted to, I've gotten to watch some of the other wrestlers and I like the product. I thought that was really interesting, just his ability to actually bring fans to AEW that maybe hadn't watched wrestling in decades. So everything about that. And, I loved his, I loved his match with, it was, is him in Great Muta. And I feel like the Great Muta retirement tour and the Great Muta thing was kind of a template that AEW was able to use for Sting because Muta had retired the previous year and had done the Muta final bye-bye tour where he did all these checklist matches. And one of them was Sting, Darby Allin and Muto versus I forget who he wrestled, but three Muto opponents in Noah. And I thought that was a really cool match that they did, especially because I like to envision like Sting showing up, with Darby Allin and telling Muto like, "Oh, don't worry, this guy, he's gonna do all the bumps. Like, just don't worry about it." It was just a lot of fun. That's really what it was. It was a lot of fun, and wrestling is supposed to be fun. And Sting's last run, and especially this match, was an incredible amount of fun to watch.
And we go to out with the old, literally, and then in with the new. And that being two free agent signings, we'll start out with the one that was made a bigger deal. Of course, we were both there in the house for this. Mercedes Moné signing with AEW officially, and debuting at Dynamite Big Business at the TD Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Mercedes Moné, of course, yeah, she made her appearance on the show. Obviously, debut, big promo, big pop, all that stuff you know about. Bayley, Naomi, and Tamina were in the house. Early in the day, this was kind of just a random thing got tossed in there. Tony Khan met with Taro Okada, the Stardom president, ahead of the show. There was no Stardom presence or anything like that on the show, but it was just kind of a that I remember. But it was just a kind of just a random thing that came out earlier in the day, Boston of all places. Mercedes afterwards said she felt like Stone Cold Steve Austin in her AEW debut, and this was a great quote. You have of course this one. You have Tony Khan saying Mercedes Moné is perfect to be the face of AEW. And then leading up to this, Mercedes Moné did an interview. She says, "I'll know I'll be back in WWE one day." It's just the timing of that was just so bad. And so this was obviously something that had been rumored for quite some time. They were finally able to make it happen, assume a multi-year deal, of course, if it's 2 or 3 years or what have you. As we sit here in Thursday, November 21st, as we're talking, what have you made of the Mercedes Moné experience in AEW thus far?
I thought like her debut, as you said, we were there live, was really well done. It was clearly kind of like done in the model of the CM Punk debut, the first dance, kind of the Rampage in Chicago, where they didn't announce that CM Punk was going to be there, but they did basically all but said he was going to show up. They made a special event show, and they started the show right with CM Punk coming out. That was what they did with Mercedes Moné. I remember it drew like, I don't know, like 8,500 to 9,000 people, which has to be one of the biggest Dynamite crowds of the year. Certainly the biggest crowd they've had. I don't know what Grand Slam ended up doing, but it was probably somewhere around the ballpark. But that was really successful. Like in terms of where we're like the last like looking at what she's done in AEW so far, I gotta say, Josh, I'd be really disappointed. I think that her promos and her character and her personality have felt very robotic and wooden in a way that's really off-putting in AEW, where I think one of their strengths is authenticity and natural personalities on the screen. And I feel like she's been, I think her booking has been fine in terms of, they've really built this TBS title around her. She's on television all the time. She's on every pay-per-view. She's presented as a star. I think all of that has been fine. I just don't think that she has delivered as a star, being able to bring more people to the product, be able to pop quarter hours, be able to come across like the biggest star in the company, which was the goal when they signed her, and I'm sure she's being compensated as such. I just don't think the results have been there. I don't think her performances have been particularly great. I don't, her matches have been okay, but I think there was kind of a belief that, she would go out there and she'd have the best women's matches in the company. I don't think that that's really happened. Right now, as a fan of AEW, I would say that I'm way more interested in some of the other women on the roster than I am in Monet. And I don't think it's been really, I think it's been really disappointing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was thinking about that this morning that, as we were recording this before Full Gear on Saturday, it's it just I it just hasn't it hasn't done anything business wise. And you're mentioning that debut. So tickets distributed according to WrestleTix was 95-14 an estimate, and I think it was a $425,000 gate. So yeah, among if not their best,
Yeah, hugely
usually success
successful in that
for a
end.
Dynamite. Yeah, and that of course the year prior that was the. Blood and Guts at TD Garden as well. So yeah, this it worked, even though it's so funny because I don't she's not like synonymous with like Boston sports, you know what I mean? Like CM Punk is so synonymous with Chicago. Mercedes Moné is from here, but it's not a it's not a like I mean, she's at more Celtics games now and things like that, and I think it's kind of really an effort. Like she threw a first pitch at Fenway Park. But it's not like, the average sports fan is kind of like knows who she is. I think they might be
Yeah,
more
I
prone to know
mean,
like the Duke of Dorchester or something like that, be associated with
yeah,
Messer. You know what I mean? Or even a Cena, I guess, in some aspects too.
I guess you would say like there are certain wrestlers have hometowns and certain wrestlers are really connected to their hometowns. Punk is a great example, right? Like Punk in Chicago is special. It almost has like Roman Reigns is a huge wrestling star. Like Roman Reigns in Sarasota, Florida, is that really like does that really feel special? Like it just it
Yeah.
has to I don't know what it has to do with like basically I think it has to do with how much a wrestler wants to make their hometown part of their character and personality. Cena's from West Newbury, which is about an hour north of Boston and is a very wealthy suburb. Boston. I wouldn't say it's like really connected to like Boston, but he made it part of his character. Mercedes, I think, is kind of like halfway there. I think she feels, some of her, she, I believe she split her time between Boston and Los Angeles. I'm not 100% sure. So it kind of feels like a little bit of both. Like, I'm trying to think. I don't think I know where she went to high school. She might have gone to like high school, like online or something like that. There's not as much connective tissue there. She did, I will say this. I don't know if you were there for this, Josh. Did you see that? Were you there for the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view in Boston where she wrestled Charlotte? And they worked the
No.
main event. They worked, so they worked the main event of that show, and she came out to with a really grand entrance, and they did make a really big deal that this is her, Sasha Banks's hometown, Boston, Massachusetts. And I think a lot of people that were at the Dynamite show, the Big Business Show, kind of remembered that big a major match in the same building. So I think that definitely helped.
And of course, the other free agent signed during that month was Kazuchika Okada, officially signed with AEW after essentially a lifetime in New Japan. Aligned nearly immediately with the Elite, and he said in an interview afterwards, working with the Elite was the main reason. There was all types of like contract details, both fake and real, that came out in terms of the money he was getting. And there was one out there that was just completely false in terms of yeah, the money he was getting and all that stuff. And then he subsequently, in the first few weeks of being there, won the Continental title from Eddie Kingston on AEW Dynamite, just completely ripping apart the Triple Crown that was the Continental Crown that was part of that whole tournament, and just got disbanded within a couple weeks. But yeah, so Okada was obviously seen as a big deal. There was some interest, I guess, from WWE, and there's some talk back and forth there. Questions of travel. He has a young family. Obviously, he and his wife just gave birth their second child, and she is a voice actress or maybe an actress in Japan. I may have that
Yeah,
mixed up.
she's like a celebrity in Japan. I know she's a really successful voice actress, which
Yeah.
is like a big, well-known career in Japan.
So we say that because obviously WWE less unrelenting when it comes to someone working overseas, whereas AEW really seems to make it work because they've done with a lot of the UK wrestlers, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I will say I've been completely underwhelmed by this Okada run thus far, and it seems I just kind of get the sentiment from others This is kind of what you expect. He's best, and Rich Fan actually put it well. Is like one of the tough things with Okada is most of it, the really good matches, you got to spend half an hour kind of getting there, and you just don't have that when it comes to a 12-minute TV match or 15-man match. He's done a lot of multi-mans. He was in this year's Blood and Guts for some reason, even though he did virtually nothing really in there. I think this Continental Classic coming up is hugely important for him. Not for a legacy thing, but I just there's that do I give a shit factor, frankly, and I don't have it with him in AEW. And I was not a big New Japan watcher, so for people like me, obviously I knew who he was, appreciate who he was. I've seen a couple matches here or there, but in terms of just the why do I care, I just don't have it with him. Yet I don't know if I ever will, and I know he's another one that just hasn't brought in fans or things like that. I struggle with this one and kind of where it fits compared to. You gotta look at the big three: the Okada, Mercedes, and Will Ospreay. Ospreay has just worked for so many reasons. I think his spectacularness obviously leads to that, but just more life, I guess. And I don't know, Okada for me has not worked. What about you?
Yeah, I feel similarly to you in terms of, and I think there's a bunch of different factors in play, but I definitely agree in the sense of like you bring in and sign this guy who, even if you're not a huge New Japan fan, people recognize him as a major main event level star right away. And he hasn't really performed as that. He hasn't really been presented as that. I think a couple things that have worked against him, the first being the whole evil elite angle beating up Tony Khan, really fizzled out and has kind of gone away and has left him kind of directionless. I think they're really just waiting on this Continental Classic to kind of reset his career in his role in AEW, because he's essentially just been kind of like a henchman for the Young Bucks, like a well-qualified, highly paid henchman. But that has been kind of an awkward spot for him to be put in. I think when I think about him as a performer, I for one, I do think he's done well, like adjusting to American wrestling television and being a personality. I think that the charisma is there. I think that isn't an issue. If we're talking about a guy having a bunch of great matches, which is really his calling card, that obviously hasn't been there. In regards to that, I think of him like people have watched the NFL. If they watch Travis Kelce this season, like there's this element of Travis Kelce where it's like, he's kind of saving himself for the playoffs. He doesn't, get 10 passes to catch 10 passes a game. There's this preservation aspect. Patriots fans saw the same way with Rob Gronkowski when he was older and more injury prone, which is like you see flashes here and there, but we're not seeing the full dominant season that we saw in his prime. But there's been a couple games this season where Travis Kelce has had like 10 catches and 120 yards and looked like his old self. And I feel it's kind of like the way Okada has been operated in New Japan or in AEW, where it's like, yeah, we're not going to see Prime Okada have 15 four-star matches in a year. That guy's still there, but he's not there on a consistent basis. And I do feel like it's conserving, him for some a few handful of big moments. He's obviously worked a very, he's not super old, but he's certainly worked a very demanding physical schedule for a long period of time in New Japan as a top guy for so many years, doing the G1 for so many years in a row, working that schedule, working all these big main event matches that were very physically demanding. So I'm sure he's taking it easier for those reasons. The difference between Okada and Monet to me is like I don't really have any concerns that high level performer is still there, because I think we've seen it. And I think this Continental Classic is going to prove a lot of things. With Monet, I'm like, I just don't know if she's a right fit for AEW and that she's going to be able to deliver at the highest level. I still pretty much have that confidence in Okada because I don't think there's anything physically wrong with him. I just think a lot of it is how he's been utilized. And I think that can be easily rectified. And part of it is, Tony, I think, commits to his big picture plans and he doesn't necessarily adjust them if things change. He likes to stick to them. That's one of the reasons that I think we're still getting this MJF Adam Cole feud, even though I think that's really cooled off because of the time that Adam Cole missed, is because that was Tony's plan and he wants to do that. And I think you sign Okada and he has all these plans for the AEW world title and everything. And so it's like, okay, Okada can be given this thing on the side, but he doesn't fit my main event, pay-per-view main event picture for 2024. So we're not gonna really use him like that. And so maybe in 2025, they've got bigger plans for him and he can take off. I still believe that guy's there. I still believe he's capable of doing that. I just don't think he's been utilized that way.
Let's go with some of the rest of what happened in AEW Ring of Honor for the month. I'll go with this first chunk and then kick it over to you for your thoughts, anything that sticks out. Miro, remember him? It revealed he had been injured since September, received some medical attention in January. His loss 2024 continues. And again, as the year would go on, he would request his release. At this point, that has not happened that we know of. So yeah, Miro, and then also he and his wife CJ Perry separating after 7 years of marriage. Of course, she was done with AEW at later in the year officially. Martha Hart gave her blessing for Sting's AEW Dynamite Rafters entrance. You remember that leading into AEW's or leading into Revolution. Dynasty was officially announced for April, the inaugural one. Available to buy on YouTube TV and sorry YouTube and also pay-per-view.com in the U.S. in addition to Triller. So that was a big change and an acknowledgement that things were changing with Bleacher Report and that the unsustainability of Bleacher Report was being admitted to by, I think, both parties. And it was time to expand out the universe when it came to streaming. First match was announced for that. Swerve Strickland defending the world title against, or sorry, Samoa Joe defending the world title against would-be champion, soon-to-be champion, Swerve Strickland. The company announced the next three pay-per-views are going to be available on both Triller and Fight. Mike Santana no longer with the company. Sammy Guevara suspended by the company. Jim Ross signing a new contract. More than likely, it'll be his last year as announcer, he said, which I think is best for him considering all the ailments and issues and things like that. Just not great health. And I think they've used him in a better way in the past few months, 6 months or so, as his health issues just kind of rack up. His new book, Business is About to Pick Up, was set to be released in May. Kevin Kelly, fired by AEW. That will come up more later in our year. Jake the Snake Roberts re-signed a contract with AEW. Ray Phoenix was announced for a May indie event. Tournament for the vacant tag team titles. Obviously, Darby and Sting relinquishing the titles. So, a tournament was announced for those. The Continental title was revealed to be put up annually in the Continental Classic tournament, again, which kicks off this Wednesday. Kenny Omega provided a health update. Said he recently underwent emergency treatment. His return, as we know, is at this point planned to be for the January 5th Wrestle Dynasty show. I still would be super surprised if he doesn't make at least one physical appearance on AEW before then. He can say that AEW doesn't need him all he wants. I just find it hard to believe that one of your top guys in an EVP is going to make his first on-screen appearance for New Japan. I can't buy that, but we'll see what happens. Matt Hardy confirmed his contract was up in March, offered a new deal, and he also he was negotiating and attended Monday's Raw or a WWE Raw event in North Carolina, which caused a lot of scuttlebutt and all this stuff. And he was basically just backstage visiting friends and so on and so forth. Bryan Danielson versus Will Ospreay, another match made official for Dynasty. A lot of people excited about that one. Matt Cardona made a surprise appearance on Collision, taking on Adam Copeland in one of the Open Challenge Cope Opens. The company officially announced the hiring responsibilities for Koshy Erbey, their new COO. Ricky Stark said he was all good following an injury scare in Collision. Looked like he had a stinger there. He would not wrestle in AEW after March. We'll talk more about that. And then the date was announced for Battle of the Belts 10, April in Kentucky, as the end of the road was coming for Battle of the Belts. We just didn't know it yet. Thoughts about any of
It's kind of a depressing series
that?
news updates. Like a lot of guys just getting injured, guys who are either no longer with the company or like functionally no longer with the company. The Kevin Kelly whole incident, which the Voices of Wrestling Discord somehow played a role in that story. The Kenny Omega thing, obviously. you mentioned that work. I'm going to make a prediction for you, Josh, and it's gonna because I'm pretty sure this is not going to go. This is going to be published after this event, but I think Kenny Omega is going to appear at the end of Full Gear
Okay,
because
I like it.
I think full like the most logical ending for Full Gear is Orange Cassidy is getting beaten up by the Death Riders after the match. Like Jon Moxley retains, and also Orange Cassidy's getting beat up, and somebody exciting has to come in and make the save. And I feel like that Kenny would be the perfect person to do that. Now, does that mean that Kenny's going to go feud with Jon Moxley over the world title? I'm not 100% sure on that, but I do think that Kenny is going to make an appearance at Full Gear. I don't really like I'm not really I don't really care about like oh he's going to make his first match back is going to be with New Japan, which that's not even true. Dynasty is a joint show, so it's an AEW show and a New Japan show. It's in yes, it's in Japan. But I don't really see that as like an issue that like oh he's not going to make his first appearance with AEW, but I do agree with you that he's going to make an appearance with AEW soon. And the company I think really needs him, and I
Yes.
think that there's a huge positive. I think there's a huge positive piece of momentum they can get if Kenny can come back full time healthy, which we've seen so little of him over the last few years. That there's a huge win there coming when he returns.
We go to the next chunk here. Nick Aldis admitted that he felt a little betrayed about the formation of AEW after All In 2018. Anthony Henry suffered a broken jaw, was out of the tag team title tournament. Cummings announced that Double or Nothing was official, Vegas Grand Garden Arena in late May, per usual. Shelton Benjamin and possibly joining AEW. The ball is in their court. He admitted he had talked to them, but it would be, of course, quite some time before that would happen. Will Ospreay says AEW offered a way better deal than WWE. Stardom and CML wrestlers were announced, or it was basically reported by Dave that they were going to take part in the Forbidden Door show this year, which was different than the years past. Supercard of Honor was starting to take shape with couple title matches, Stardom Trios match, and so on and so forth. Swerve Strickland was set to perform at the Rolling Loud Music Festival. Chris Jericho, I just threw this quote in here. Chris Jericho says, "My mission in AEW has always been to elevate younger talent," which I think a lot of people disagree with. Darby Allin suffered a broken foot in that big business match against Jay White, and then his climb for Mount Everest was postponed. Something to keep in mind as we approach this March is that he's planning on going again for the climb in April. So just I know some people think, oh, he's going to win the world title and all these things. Just he's going to be gone for some time as if he doesn't get hurt first again. So we'll just some kind of put a pin in. Zack Knight was set to make his in-ring debut on Collision. Of course, that's Saraya's brother, and kind of a lost year for him. He signed a deal and was having some mental health issues by his admission. And he said he's been great to go since August. So we're still kind of waiting to see if he makes his return. I think it's going to be even harder with Rampage going away. Adam Copeland defeated Christian Cage for the TNT title on Dynamite to end their feud and rivalry. And Copeland going in this said it was the match was a culmination of 40 years of a relationship between those two guys. Jack Perry disputed apologizing for the fight with CM Punk and was denied his say he re requested a release by AEW. I don't know if that's legitimate or not, but he said he was denied that release request. Wheeler Yuta, still suffering the effects of a concussion, was not cleared for an AEW versus CMLL match in Mexico. Nigel McGuinness said he got back in the ring again recently and felt perfectly okay. Precursor for what was to come later on in the year at All In. And then speaking of CMLL, Team CMLL beat Team AEW on that night, and it was oh my God, Matt Sydal filled in for Wheeler Yuta there, and then also Brian Danielson versus Blue Panther was set for a future CMLL show as well. Thoughts about any of that?
I had the same takeaway as you do over the Darby Allin piece, which is it like from what they've teased so far, kind of a logical conclusion to the Moxley title run is Darby Allin beats him for the title. And it would seem like this spring would be a probably a good time for if you just kind of project when that title change should happen. This spring seems like a decent time to do that. But like you said, yeah, he's planning on climbing Mount Everest again. And my understanding is that there's a pretty narrow window of time when you can climb Mount Everest from like a weather perspective. It basically has to be like the March, April, May kind of territory. So I do wonder if that's going to play a factor in what happens. I mean, obviously he can climb Mount Everest another year, but it's already been delayed once. So that is something to keep an eye on.
All right, let's go to WWE and not really a I mean, there is a lot of stuff here. Let's go through this these chunks. Everything kind of had like its own, its own weight to it. So we'll spend a little bit of time going through these different spots. So, obviously the final build for WrestleMania 40, and we had The Rock and Roman Reigns issuing their Night One challenge, that against of course Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes, the whole Bloodline rules for the Reigns Cody match in night two being on the line there. John Cena's status was up in the air for that show. We got announcements for the WWE Hall of Fame, including Paul Heyman, Bull Nakano, Muhammad Ali, the US Express, and Thunderbolt Patterson, a little New England accent there, to be inducted in the Hall of Fame. Wheatley Vodka was the name of the official vodka. I included this in here for Mania 40 as the jingle, the Wheatley, it's fine to drink it neatly or whatever it was, which is stuck in my head because these commercials played like seems like every 10 minutes during the pay-per-views and such. WrestleMania, we learned, may not be The Rock's only match in WWE of 2024. Of course, other things like six-pack tag team title match, Uso versus Uso match, Slammy Awards were announced to be returned during the weekend. Gunther versus Sami Zayn. CM Punk was announced as being a guest commentator, and the company teased a Meek Mill performance. Seth Rollins was cleared medically to return to the ring after his knee injury, so obviously he'd be a big part of both nights of WrestleMania. Rey Mysterio returned after being out since November with a torn meniscus. We said Vince McMahon starting to sell a lot of stock. This is something he would do repeatedly throughout the year. Started with 25% of his stock, then he sold $100 million worth of stock later on. TKO was not involved in that, and we still don't kind of really know why he was selling it all. He still owns around 8 million shares to date, but essentially was cashed out, I think, and it all said and done, like over $1 billion worth. And there was some questions, is preparing for some other lawsuit, is his funding this new company and all this stuff, or maybe just wanted his money, who knows. John Cena met MJF. I believe this was on the red carpet for the Iron Claw, I believe, or some sort of other red carpet. Say he was floored by his professionalism. WWE and Netflix having discussed, it was revealed that the discussion between WWE and Netflix originally focused on NXT. TKO executive said that this is Mark Shapiro. I think I wrote this one. Insatiable demand exists for what he called underpriced domestic PLE rights, that being, of course, the Peacock deal, which is up in 2026. Former WWE wrestler Daniel Rodimer in police custody on a murder charge. The company celebrated reaching 100 million YouTube subscribers. Dominic Mysterio got married. WWE and Prime, Logan Paul's company, reached their first ever Center of the Ring sponsorship deal. Again, something TKO had promised was they were going to start leveraging more assets in the building, something that Vince didn't want to do. Vince gone, they're going to sell the shit out of everything. And Paul Heyman said that Roman Reigns is the most innovative and transformative wrestler in history. Thoughts about their first chunk?
Yeah, I mean, going back in time, like that was like this March and April lead up to WrestleMania, in terms of like popularity for WWE, really was like almost unseen heights in terms of, you remember this was in the midst of their sellout streak where they were like every Raw and SmackDown was doing like 15 to 17,000 fans. I mean, they were just so, The Rock's presence in WWE, it's because he this does in fact look like it was only his only match in WWE in 2024. I mean, his presence for this build after getting off to a awkward start, was he just so enormous. He had such a positive impact on business, television ratings, the live events, and made those the whole WrestleMania was built around him, really. Even though he wasn't even in the second match, it was just his star power. He just came in and he, flexed on everybody. He completely overshadowed Roman Reigns in the build up to to WrestleMania, to the degree that like Cody versus The Rock really felt like the hottest match, that didn't really end up happening. It's something they could definitely turn to again if they wanted to. I mean, The Rock is available to do that, but I really just he was enormous. Like, I remember in kind of the end of his run, after WrestleMania, it was kind of talked about like, oh, The Rock is going to win a bunch of awards. He should win best box office draw. He should win, best on promos. He should win best most charismatic. I don't know if that's still going to hold true just because he hasn't been around at all since April, but he was like easily just like a star, almost like the likes of which we have like never seen or haven't seen for an extremely long period of time. Just his role in WWE during this time period really can't be understated or can't be overstated.
And we're going to talk more about The Rock in just a second. Jim Ross made his first comments on the Vince McMahon allegations as, and again, more and more people are asked about these things and are somewhat speaking honestly, put it that way. John Cena and The Rock were set to present, they did present awards at the 2024 Oscars. WWE 2K24 came out. Nick Khan and other quote unquote WWE corporate officers in the Janelle Grant lawsuit were identified. And then we get some Rock stuff. The Rock on turning heel in WWE. It's the best. Now, if you remember the slap from Cody Rhodes on SmackDown, he responded to that in only he way he could. And again, this dual role with in Instagram, he would post these profanity-laced 10 to 12 minute, seemingly, or 8 to 10 minute promos and so on and so forth. And then much more PG version going up on the main show, so to speak. Speaking of that, he reacted to this is a Dave report, I believe, that standards of practices have issues with his language, which he kind of just denied in his own way, essentially because he was using much more adult language. A lot more stuff had to be blocked out, especially it was so noticeable on SmackDown on Fox, where you would just have these like gaps of time, which felt like minutes, but really like seconds. But just it's one of those things where you just picture people like looking at their remote and be like, something going on my audio or something, like just long, long stretches, the crowd chants and all these things. Not great. The company shared their off-air, The Rock shared off-air footage from his beatdown of Cody Rhodes. This was out by the his tour bus. I remember it was like raining out and it was kind of a cool scene. But again, they're just kind of expanding out the kind of expanding out their window of time. What's the best way of saying this? So stuff that happened after Raw, they made it seem really important, like you had to go to social to see all this stuff. And because obviously it started during the end of the show, but then it kind of kept going and they made a point to really hit home that more stuff happened. They wanted people to see it. And as you mentioned, talking about The Rock overshadowing Reigns, the duo appeared on the Tonight Show during WrestleMania week. SummerSlam 2024 is announced for Cleveland. John Cena talking about his impending retirement or potential retirement at this point. 50 is my absolute line in the sand. Minneapolis submitted a bid to host Mania 41. Undertaker said he recently had to talk himself out of a comeback to WWE. Sol Ruka made her return to action at Roadblock for NXT. Brogan Finley made his debut and got a new name, Uriah Connors. And William Regal made a surprise NXT appearance at Roadblock. Trick Williams versus Carmelo Hayes, official for the Stand and Deliver main event during WrestleMania weekend. Shayna Baszler was set to compete at Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 10, the first WWE talent to appear at that show. So that was very interesting. We start to see the WWE expansion into other promotions and working with them start to really continue. Becky Lynch attended the White House St. Patrick's Day celebration, later became a U.S. citizen. Ivar was pulled from his Raw match against Andrade. Paul Heyman directed the Roman Reigns biography episode of Biography Legends, rather. Company announced a Road to Bash in Berlin tour. Asuka missed weekend house shows due to a potential knee injury that would become obviously a lot worse and she would be out for quite some time, still is. Company announced a Bray Wyatt Peacock documentary. Raquel Rodriguez listed as out of action on the internal roster due to some of her issues dating back to Elimination Chamber we talked about last episode. AJ Styles said this isn't the same WWE Vince McMahon was in charge of. Lyra Valkyrie versus Roxanne Perez for the NXT Women's titles is official for Stand to Deliver. I forgot about this. Brooks Jensen had to issue an apology for wearing an Ole Anderson shirt during NXT TV, which I still think it's pretty wild. And the company's WWE's EVP of live events, John Porco, departed the company. Thoughts about any of that?
Well, I mean, we kind of talked about The Rock earlier, but like The Rock basically showed up and did whatever he wanted. Like he cut whatever promos he wanted. He could say whatever he wanted. And of course, he came across as way cooler than everyone else because he was allowed to do that stuff. kind of interesting in terms of like, I feel like The Rock kind of taught everyone kind of what you need to be like a major star. And I don't know if anyone in WWE has really copied that necessarily. I think maybe that's just he had so much leeway to do whatever he wanted that other people don't have. I don't know if the standards and practices conversation really went anywhere, but I mean, WWE is really protective of his sponsorships and things like using bad language and saying some stuff that you probably shouldn't say. I'm trying to think. He said something like that, like that definitely wasn't like politically correct. I'm trying to think what it was. This.
I think he said fuck a couple times, if I remember right. And just I just remember there was just again these long blocks of stuff that got bleeped out, or just they cut the audio completely. But there was definitely a few things he said where it was I think it
Did
might
he
have been
say some like homophobic stuff?
I think you might be, was it when Roman Reigns called Seth Rollins a cross dresser? I
Oh yeah,
think
that's right. That's
that's
right.
what it was, yeah.
Well, that was Roman Reigns, not The Rock anyway.
Sure.
But like yeah, so just like we haven't really seen them get back to that line. Maybe that will just be The Rock. It'll be interesting to see if The Rock does return, what he's like. But obviously his heel turn was hugely important. This small thing on here that so Broken Finley is named Uriah Connors for some reason. Vince isn't around anymore, but this feels like such a Vince thing where they have these second or third or in Broken Finley's case fourth generation wrestlers, and they acknowledge that they're the children of these other wrestlers, but they don't give them their name. And I just don't understand that at all. I don't understand it from a marketing perspective. It would seem like to other fa to fans, you would want to market them as the children of a memorable wrestler. And that the fact that they just don't do that, they give them these other generic NXT names is very strange to me. I don't understand the reason for that.
I agree. And we'll go to the final chunk of WWE happenings. Ronda Rousey, disgusted by degrading bullshit that female talent went through during her time there, said the company is an absolute shit show. I don't intend to going back to, and I didn't want to be Vince McMahon's action fucking figure anymore. So she was certainly letting him have it with both barrels later in the year. Kind of also opening up the door to potential return. So we'll see what happens there. Nick Aldis underwent surgery for a ruptured biceps. Maryse announced she was tumor-free after successful surgery. Goldberg, WWE had, quote-unquote, some Japanese girl beat my undefeated streak. Jade Cargill joined the SmackDown roster officially. Ronda Rousey, I mentioned that one already. WWE Next Gen docuseries was set to premiere early April on Roku, and it came and went. That was just, content, I guess, but didn't really seem to make any impact whatsoever. I can't remember if I watched that or not. The company revealed, of course, in the wake of the Vince McMahon stuff, that they developed a consensual relationships policy in June 2023. Olympic gold medalist Tamra Mensah-Stock debuted at an NXT house show, another one that would eventually get her own a different name for some reason. Cody Rhodes confirmed that he had signed a new WWE contract. I believe that was perhaps late in October 23. October 23 for some reason sounds right when he had actually, there was rumors that came out about that, and he officially confirmed it. So he's not going anywhere, and I don't think he ever will go anywhere again. Martha Hart on the Vince McMahon allegations, the level of wickedness is beyond the pale. Undertaker said that Bray Wyatt was the logical choice to break the WrestleMania streak. It came out that NXT ba this is actually legitimate. NXT Battleground was pushed back to June, moving locations. It would move to the UFC Apex in Las Vegas, for all places. WWE and AEW program AE and A&E programming was set to return this April, and a new host of Rivals was named as well. Becky Lynch said Ronda Rousey was mishandled in WWE. Natalya made a surprise appearance in NXT. Mike Rotunda said that Bray Wyatt not going into the Hall of Fame was less stressful for him. Of course, part of the U.S. Express. Becky Lynch says she had 2 months left on her WWE contract, and she is that was actually legit. And while I don't think anyone thinks she is going to AEW, she's not back in WWE, and I think everyone assumes she's going to come back at some point. And the company revealed the date of WWE Speed on Twitter, on X, and announced a tournament would crown the first men's champion, and a women's champion would come later on in the year. Anything of that stick out?
Yeah, I mean the Tamara Mensah-Stock thing again, as we mentioned, the weird names. Like, what if, like, imagine if they gave Kurt Angle a new name?
I know.
Like, why wouldn't you want people Googling Tamara Mensah-Stock? Like, It's so strange. You mentioned that you don't think Cody Rhodes is ever going to go anywhere else. I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I
Really?
think,
Okay.
I mean, you know, who knows what the future holds, right? But there's obviously a lot of money, I think, to be made in Cody returning to AEW and in doing stuff creatively there. That, and I do think Cody has shown that he is someone that is very eager to identify opportunities and to jump on them to grow his wrestling presence. He's obviously in a tremendous position in WWE, but in 3 or 4 years, if he's kind of maybe cooled off as a star in WWE, maybe he's grown kind of stale. We saw that happen to him in AEW. Obviously, a jump back to AEW would be a total reignition of his career. So I could see, I mean, it's something way, way down the line, but it's something that I would be really excited for. And I think he has shown that he's willing to leave WWE to go do something else if he thinks it can better his career. If he thinks, I'm sure, you know what disagreements him and Tony have, but I think that a big sack of money could change that. As it does for most wrestling problems.
The reason I don't think that that he is leaving potentially ever is I think whatever issues between he and AEW still we don't know what they are, but it was bad enough that he decided to leave, he and his wife, and apparently I don't know if there's something going on there. I think he may have actually said it wasn't, but there's just so much just and this happens with all these AEW stories. There's just so many questions that leave people to speculate and guess instead of just being ahead of it and saying, yeah, this happened, or just coming up with a story that actually works. Instead, it just leaves up conjecture. I think, and I say this in a respectful way of Cody, I think he's a front runner. I think he understands where the wind blows, and right now he is with the hottest company in the game. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. Even if they take a dip, I think they're going to be so financially way better off than anyone else. I agree that his character could cool off at some point, but I think he his if I was to guess, his long term would be to be the Bruce Pritchard to Triple H in the future, because Bruce Pritchard's not going to be around forever, and I wonder if Triple H wants if he would want that kind of higher up position and to be involved and perhaps someone on the business side maybe, but I think he's a great ambassador for the company. He always says speak. He's always looked great in a suit and just has that public persona. I just can't picture him going back to AEW unless something goes disastrous in WWE. I don't see it. And also, by the time this comes up,
You don't think Tony could offer Cody a ton of money, like, and
I'm
Cody
sure
would say yes?
he could offer him a ton of money. It depends on what shape AEW is in at that point. And this isn't the death knell for AEW, but they have a couple of years to really figure this out to see if they're going to get this. That the Put it this way, the fact that they got a 3-year guaranteed deal from WBD with the option for a fourth told me a little bit in my mind of like they're not sure how this is going to go. And I think you have basically, most TV deals start coming up in terms of negotiations, a year or so before. They have 2 years to really kind of right the ship in terms of reestablish themselves with, bigger attendance and a hotter product again. There's no guarantee that's going to happen. And I can't see they could offer a ton of money as a last ditch effort if they were at that spot. I think there's just a lot of questions all around with AEW, and I don't know. Cody could go back as a conquering hero. I think he'd probably want a piece of ownership of the company and some other aspects, whatever the stuff was in the past, cleared up. But I think these guys are getting in there now with the plan of burrowing in even more. And I think Punk is trying to do that with this, I want to run NXT, which I mean, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I just don't. And then with Cody, he just fits so perfectly in that corporate culture, and I think I just can't see him. I stranger things have happened, as we have seen and will continue to see. I just have a hard time seeing that one. There's a lot of money to be made him going back. I agree. I just wonder if it's worth it to him I just wonder if it's worth it to him. If if the door was open to her, then go back to I just can't see it happening for those reasons I laid out.
Yeah, I mean, the argument I would say would be that in a few years, it's possible that Cody's role in WWE, and right now he's the top babyface in the company, really. I guess Roman is technically a babyface, you can obviously, but he's a joint top babyface in the company for sure. 3 or 4 years from now, is he still in that role? Has he cooled off? Has he gotten stale? I think the Cody character has a shelf life. I think it's lasted longer in WWE because its fan base is less discerning and critical than AEW's fan base. But I do think he's going to hit that point where kind of his phoniness and his promo style gets a little old. And I think that there's a possibility where he feels himself sliding down the totem pole in the hierarchy in the company and sees a reignition of his career. Right now, everything's great. But if we're just going to project 3 or 4 years down the road, I think it's possible that he sees a chance, a jump to AEW as a chance to really reignite his interest level in him, which it would almost certainly do.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Japan, let's go through the month of Japan. Stephanie Vakure defeating Julia for the New Japan Strong Women's Championship. Of course, a precursor. This is all a preview for their NXT run. Of course, we didn't even know that was going to happen in March. Obviously, we knew Julia was on her way, but the Vakure thing, which we'll talk about later on in the year, was a little bit of a surprise. Jack Perry officially joined House of Torture at the New Japan 52nd Anniversary Show. All Japan's Yutaka Yoshi passed away during a match in Takasaki. It was not due to anything in the ring, but due to what's called arteriosclerosis, which I should have actually looked up, but it was made to point after it wasn't actually the wrestling that caused him to pass away. So just had to be bad luck, I guess. Stardom announced to be taking place in the Wrestling World 2024 event in Taiwan. Tournament for the Never Six Man titles was set for that Wrestling World event. Of course, Okada being part of the group that vacated those as he was heading to AEW. Dave Finley had to miss the New Japan Cup and some other events due to illness. Gabe Kidd signed a new contract with the company. They crowned a New Japan Cup winner, which I should have actually jotted down, but I don't know actually who it was. Nick Nemeth challenged Ishii for the Windy City Riot Show. Four wrestlers were revealed to be leaving Stardom and joining Rossi Gawa's Marigold promotion. Matt Riddle was announced to be defending the New Japan World TV title at MLW's War Chamber show. So another cross promotion there. Al Coughlin saying he was retired. The United Japan Pro Wrestling Group have revealed they were bringing back All Together for May. Stardom announced their card for a card for their United States return. Something called, includes any of these wacky matches, a Frontier Zone match was booked for Sakura Genesis, and then a Rural Revitalization match is official for the New Japan Road to Sakura Genesis as well. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, those are the New Japan King of Pro Wrestling Trophy Awards.
Yes.
Yoda Tsuji won the New Japan Cup, by
Oh,
the
thank
way,
you.
in
Thank
case
you.
you're wondering. Two thoughts. The first being that New Japan spent money on these ex-WWE wrestlers like Nick Nemeth and Matt Riddle, and they really didn't do anything for the company. So that was the money not well spent, I would say. The other thing is the Alex Coughlin saying he's retired. If we go back in the time machine a few years to like the New Japan US Dojo in the early days of like New Japan Strong, and there's so much optimism about that class of wrestlers. And you know, the three people were really excited about were Coughlin, Clark Connors, and then of course, oh my gosh, why can't I even remember his name now? He's the DJ now in NXT. That's gonna drive me.
Oh.
This is crazy. That's Thorpe. Eddie Thorpe, is that his name?
Oh, Eddie Thorpe. Yes, that's
No,
his name
why can't
now.
I remember his? That's gonna drive me crazy. I gotta look it up now.
Oh,
Carl Fredericks, of course. Carl Fredericks.
yes.
So, like, and Fredericks was seen as like a really like a can't miss prospect, a guy that was gonna be a huge, huge star. And just the way that those careers have worked out for those guys subsequently have been really disappointing. Coughlin's retired. Carl Fredericks is a low level NXT wrestler with a bad gimmick. And Clark Connors is doing by far the best, but he still seems like he's kind of just like a guy as part of the War Dog stable in New Japan. But like really, really disappointing outcome for those guys, especially when you go back like 3 or 4 years. I think it's a lesson in projecting stardom for anyone in pro wrestling. If they show a lot of potential, there's a lot of stuff that can happen.
Very true. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Kind of more AEW now than that. But what is, does Jack Perry do anything for you?
I like Jack Perry, and I think he's gotten a bad rap. I think he's my take on Jack Perry is I think he's hit every benchmark that they've asked him to do. I thought he was fine when he first started, when he still didn't have a lot of experience as a babyface. I thought his work with Jurassic Express, and I thought they had really good matches as tag team champions. I thought they were a fun tag team that people were into, not like a main event act the way like maybe like the Young Bucks or an FTR would be, but still pretty good. And then I think his heel run this year has been really good. I mean, I how everyone in House of Torture can jump into a dumpster. I don't care about them at all. I think they're like a horrible score. Horrible, horrible influence on New Japan in general. But just I think that, and I think he comes out and I think he's a unlikable heel. I was against showing the security footage. I thought it was a cheap like ratings ploy, but I do think that it has helped Jack Perry get over as a heel. I like this character. I think that he has been subject to look, I mean, other people don't he doesn't do anything for them. I get it. Though that's a personal opinion. I think he's done really well in his role. I don't think he's being pushed as like a main event guy. I think that, but as far as a guy that I think, as right now he's a mid-card heel, I think he does a pretty good job of getting heat and people want to see him lose and people want to see him get his ass kicked. I think he's a fine worker. I think he's done well as this whole scapegoat character. So I'm a fan of his. I think that, and I think he has, I think he's been criticized a lot and used as kind of an example of like a weak person that AEW was pushing, but I personally don't see it that way.
Yeah, doesn't do anything for me. I've tried. It just doesn't. This, I think the build this Garcia match has been a little odd, where he's kind of one taking, he's kind of one getting beat up and tied to his van and driven around, and the thing from Dynamite where essentially he's just chained. And these two guys are just like essentially torturing him, and he just doesn't seem to care. I'm just not buying it at this point. So yeah, that's me. But yeah, it's interesting. That's a completely different viewpoint. Let's go to TNA, which I'm sure will align on viewpoints here. Alex Hammerstone, the longtime NLW star, signing with the company, set to face Josh Alexander at Sacrifice. Laredo Kid was off that show due to travel issues. Eddie Edwards and Brian Myers have won the tag team titles, and Spitfire won the Knockouts tag team titles at that show. Under Siege was announced for May. Nick Nemeth set to challenge Moose for the world title at April's Rebellion. Motor City Machine Guns. It was learned that Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin's contracts were expiring in April, obviously a precursor to them eventually signing with WWE, which I think was a surprise to many. Killer Kelly taking time away from TNA, but she was still with the company. That is because later on it was revealed she was pregnant. Ace Austin re-signing with the company. And Steve Macklin confirmed his contract was up this May and would love to stay, and he is still there. So I assume that contract renewal happened at some point. Yeah, TNA just kind of, again, just keeps on plugging away. This is in the first full month of the post Scott D'Amore era. He was fired in February, but yeah, they keep just bringing in people and letting go people, and just a different group with some cast of characters. Obviously, the Motor City Machine Guns were leaving, but really wasn't much else they could do there at that point. Hammerstone coming in, I think, made a lot of sense. But any thoughts about any of this stuff in TNA for last month, or for March rather?
Yeah, probably a theme to the TNA section of these shows this year is I find 2024 to be, I think that TNA, especially going back to the TNA name and there being some real goodwill coming from the company heading into 2024, I don't really think they've necessarily capitalized on that momentum for a number of reasons. And their relationship with WWE, obviously, which was really touched on here because I don't think it had really taken off all that much is I guess one to monitor, but I don't really see what I don't really see TNA having gotten a ton of benefit from that in terms of people being way more interested in TNA. I think that some of their talent has done well appearing on WWE television, but that seems just more like WWE's eventually going to sign some of these people.
Yeah, like Jordynne Grace, I would say that's a lock. Yeah, I mean the fact that TNA talent gets more TNA chance at NXT shows than at their own shows kind of tells you something, right? Yeah, especially like the Rascal. Yeah, all the good storylines have been in WWE, which is no big surprise every single time. Yeah, definitely.
WWE's benefited from it.
Every single time. That's just, it's what happens. And it was funny. There's an interview that in a future episode that we'll talk about with one of the TNA execs that used to work with WWE, and essentially said, you know, there's no difference between the two companies other than content distribution. And it's like that's the craziest statement I think I've heard in quite some time. And I mean, there's talent there, but just, it is night and day when it comes to scale and when it comes to, just all this, how it just, so they're completely different. It's just a completely different relationship. In fact, your stars are over in their company as opposed to their own. And that's a huge red flag.
It bothered me. It shouldn't really bother me because I think it's coming from clueless people. But like the idea that like the TNA WWE relationship has been more be was more beneficial than the AEW WWE TNA relationship is really annoying. I mean, AEW may let Kenny Omega be the TNA world champion and wrestle on their shows and. I think he drew their biggest pay-per-view number in like 10 years or something like that as AEW champion and or as TNA world champion. And just like WWE's relationship is like, we'll give you a bottom rung NXT wrestler to put on one of your shows, and we're gonna take your top stars and put them on our shows, which
Yeah.
is,
Yeah,
big difference.
there's definitely hits and misses with both for sure. But that's what happens when you're TNA. All right, let's go through the junk drawer. This is everything that didn't fit in the other sections above. The Butcher, Paul Vachon, passed away at 86 years old. BJ Whitmer received probation and house arrest on domestic violence charges, obviously not with AEW at this point. Arez, Latigo, and Toxin confirmed their departures from AAA. Former WWE talents Emma and Rick Boss got married. Emma said there was no plans to return to the ring. Michelle, she was not retiring. It seemed like TNA was a lock at some point, but she seemed to go back there to Neil Dashwood, of course. But yeah, has not. I don't know if she's even wrestled since then. Riddick Moss was announced for his first WWE post-WWE match in March. However, he's only had two matches this year, which I was talking in one of the previous episodes. It might have been last one or might one of the last two. That Elias, he had his first post-WWE match, and I just assumed he hadn't been wrestling at all or just really sparse because I hadn't heard anything about him. And I looked at his cage match thing; he's like wrestling all over the place, but I don't hear anything about him. So, same thing. This is always interesting when talents get released. Do they really want it or not? Are they willing to kind of get out there and go in the indies and do this thing? And for Riddick Moss, it just didn't seem like that's either he's not getting booked, his price is too high. Or is just not that interested. Former cameraman of WCW, Jackie Crockett, passed away. Mick Foley, now not sure if he'll have one final match after all. Remember in February, he was talking about how he wanted to have one final death match, which everyone was kind of like, ew, I don't know about that. Doesn't sound like that's going to happen. Paul Walter Hauser, the Golden Globe award-winning actor, defeated Matt Cardona at a Wrestling Revolver Ready or Not show. So the actor getting more and more into wrestling. We talk about that more as the year goes on. Vikingo had to vacate the AAA Mega Championship due to his knee surgery. Nick Nemeth, Mr. Everywhere, set to face Alberto El Patron. Yes, Alberto El Patron for the vacant AAA title. Kelly said she was open to making a wrestling comeback. Dustin and Cody Rhodes' nephews are set to make their pro wrestling debut. Chikusa Nagayo wrestled the final match of their career for West Coast Pro Wrestling. Of course, Chris Hero heavily involved in that promotion. Steve Corino and Sabu were set to be inducted into the Indie Wrestling Hall of Fame in April. As I mentioned, Mick Foley had to miss a convention due to dizziness. And Rampage Jackson, Sakuraba, and more were set for the announced for the Bloodsport Bushido event, Bloodsport's debut in Tokyo in June. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I do think like as the so AEW this year, a big thing with AEW this year is really cementing a relationship with CMLL. And what is that when you do that means that you don't have a relationship anymore with AAA. And I do think it's notable, like you mentioned, Arez leaves AAA. And what did that mean for Arez? Well, he got signed by AEW and is getting a push as a hologram. So I do wonder if like the for the a lot of the Mexican talent, the ability to work in the United States Is wait a minute, no, is Arez not hologram? Did I
No,
just
I think it's
butcher it?
I think it's Aramis, right?
Oh my God, it's Aramis.
Aramis,
All right,
yes.
all right.
I
No,
thought
I'm
the same
sorry,
thing at one
Lucha. I'm
point,
sorry, Lucha fans. I
yeah.
fucked that up. I apologize. Ignore all my points that I was about to make. Good thing I didn't get too far into that. And I caught my mistake. Anyway, moving on from that. Mick Foley, not sure if we'll have one final match. Okay, can I want to say this. I understand why people don't want to see Mick Foley have a one final match. The match itself is probably going to be pretty sad. That being said, I would love to see Mick Foley have one final match
Wow.
because I think he mentioned, like, I think, I don't know if he discussed this on the February show or not, but like he really mentioned that he's like, it's not going to be in WWE. It has to be in a promotion where I'm allowed to do a bunch of stuff. If he did a final match in, preferably for me, if it was an AEW, like I want them to do the Mick Foley John Moxley match that they teased doing a long time
Wow.
ago.
Wow.
That
All
would have
right.
been what, 2011, 2010. And I just want the promos. That's all I care about. I think the promos would be amazing. And I understand that the match would be sad, and I understand that for Mick Foley's health, that's probably not the best thing to do. But if you built it, you talked about the Sting, you know, the way the Sting send-off was. Mick Foley's another guy that is an iconic wrestler with generations of fans that never got a proper send-off because of the way his career ended, kind of inconsistently. I think his last match was a Royal Rumble appearance. I think that this could be great. I think the build-up perk can be amazing. I think the promos could be incredible. I think, you know, realistically, you could do a smoke and mirrors match if you really wanted to, where you could just have him basically beating the shit out of Moxley and selling only a little bit. Like, you could do this if you really wanted to. It's something that I would, you know, I got my Nigel McGuinness return. That was like the real thing I was pining for. This is something that, like, I am very excited about seeing, even if I understand why everyone would think it's a terrible idea, because it probably is.
Yeah, I would agree. I would
Agree
agree.
that you want to see it, or agree that's a terrible idea.
I agree it's a terrible idea at this point.
You can't tell me that you don't think like a proper build and promos would be amazing, though.
Oh, that would be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's missing conventions because of dizziness and we talked about I don't know. I worry about the toll of all this these years and I don't know. I mean, yeah. I am very hesitant to put it that way. If there was some, physically, if he was like, I feel, feel really good, get a full, clean bill of health from legit doctors or something like that, then maybe. But
He needs to get the doctor that cleared Ric Flair for his last
that's how I was
match.
thinking. Yeah, exactly. Oh boy. Yeah. Well, good. Any any bold predictions as we close things out? I mean, obviously, you had the big bold prediction about Hook, 2 years ago. Any big bold predictions for 2025 you want to get off your chest?
A bold prediction. Mick Foley wins the AEW World Championship.
Hey, there you go. All right. I like it.
let me think. So, my bold prediction is, I have a couple of ideas. I'm going to say that AEW experiences real progress in terms of its business metrics going up in
Okay.
2024, in 2025. I think that they are going to, I think that for two reasons. I think they're going to recover some losses that they had. By coming up with some new ideas and pushing some new talent in 2025 that connects with an audience in a better way than some of the inconsistencies of 2024. And I think most relevant, as I think WWE cools off a bit in 2025, and that is a positive for AEW, just like how when WWE got hot was a negative for AEW.
All right, that's a bold
I'm
prediction.
also really interested in this John Cena retirement tour and what they actually do with him during it. Because I think, like, John Cena's, despite I think there being a ton of potential there, I think John Cena's appearances in over the last few years and the programs he has worked have been enormously disappointing. So I do wonder what does the John Cena retirement tour look like? How interesting is it? How around? He seems like, he's going to be around a lot, but what does that mean? Is he going to wrestle 25 matches? Is he going to wrestle 5 matches? Who is he going to feud with? What are they going to use him for? Because I think using him to get over, to try to put over these younger wrestlers that they don't have a ton of faith in has not been a good use of him since
Yeah,
he's during his limited dates.
I agree.
Like the Austin Theory stuff wasn't a good work. Now, if you wanted to do John Cena versus Cody Rhodes, you want to do Cena Punk again, you want to do Cena versus Roman, that stuff would be huge. But if they're focused more on let him work with Bron Breakker, let him work with these other guys, I think that's going to be a waste of them. And I'm kind of interested in seeing how that develops in 2025. Not really a prediction, but something I want to see.
I think they're gonna get every bit that they can out of it. And I think I think you're gonna see that. I think you're gonna see another Orton match. If you
Okay,
remember
well, that
that.
would be a waste too, just saying.
I was watching, so I
Didn't
bring
they have a match where they said this is the last time they're ever going to wrestle each other or something like that?
of course they did. Yeah, but you know what how that works. People forget. I was watching actually watched a lot of over the past couple of days, a lot of 2007 and 2008 John Cena matches, if you'd believe
Yeah.
that. I've it has to
No,
be
that's
put.
an interesting. I go back and watch that period sometimes because I remember it, obviously, but it's a time that most people don't go back and watch, and it's kind of interesting to study that stuff.
So
What
the
did you
reason,
note?
yeah, the reason I was watching it is I was asked to be part of this Poison Rana, which is kind of an offshoot of a pro a post wrestling, but contributes to them, what have you. They are doing this. They're in celebration of Cena's retirement. They're going. Every month, they're doing a deep dive into John Cena's various world title and heavyweight title runs. And so I did, so I was asked to be part of their third, fourth one. So this covered through the Orton feud early on when John Cena first came back from an injury. And then it was into there was a Batista, there was a long Jericho feud in there. There was this was Jericho was in the suit and all that. There was a Batista match, the first ever singles match at WWE for SummerSlam. There was this angle with JBL when JBL was doing the whole thing with Shawn Michaels, where he was his boss for some reason, and that was supposed to be believed. So yeah, it was interesting to kind of experience this because he came back twice during the stretch with injuries, and then he but people just they cheer him at first, and then you start hearing more and more boos, and people are just kind of like groaning and things like that. So again, just the full John Cena experience, which was called by Jerry Lawler, Cena was called controversial, and that's why people were booing, as he was a controversial figure when he was anything but.
This run, I think, this if he you know this upcoming retirement tour run, I think is going to be the time where John Cena is the most unanimously over
Oh
of his
yeah,
entire career.
totally. Yep, and I just hope he gets a better haircut because it's tough to see him with that big bald spot. It is like it's disarming because he just looks so. He's not an old guy, but like in wrestling and the look, he just looks so old when he's like the hair is
Well,
going over. It just
his
doesn't look right.
I mean, the commitment to the armbands and the dorch, the I don't know what I call them,
The jorts, yes.
jorts is I guess admirable, but it just looks insane in 2024.
It does 100%. 100%. Well, good. Before we let you go, Jesse, as we've wrapped up March, why don't you go ahead and plug where people can read you and hear your work. Floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty simple at the moment. Voicesofwrestling.com for all my written content, as we discussed at the top of the hour. It's less frequent than it once was, but still probably about once a month or twice a month, I would say, on average. And then Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. Just had Trevor Dame on my latest episode, talking about kind of WWE and AEW's relationship in 2024, and kind of the contrast between when AEW first started, when there was a lot of fan resentment for WWE and WWE was experiencing a big decline in popularity, and kind of what that relationship ha has developed into now that WWE is far more successful and popular. So it's kind of a thorough discussion on that end. That was episode 99. I've got episode 100 coming up. I haven't decided 100% on what I'm going to do with episode 100, but I feel like it's worthy of some sort of celebration. So that'll be coming along probably in the next few weeks.
Nice extravaganza, if you will.
I'm thinking about like what if I have like 10 guests in like 10 minute spots or something like that
There you go. Yeah, because
would be kind of interesting, but I'm like, ah, that's a lot of editing and scheduling and bullshit, and I don't know if I want to do that. So
I
we'll
hear
see.
you. I hear you. I hear you. All right. Well, once again, Jesse, thanks for your time and thanks for listening. And yeah, March 2024 in the Pro Wrestling Year in Review series has come to an end. And now we move ahead to April, which of course is WrestleMania season. And that's it. We'll see you next time.